Good to see everyone this morning, especially visitors. The sermon that I'm about to preach, I have preached before, and the people that I am thinking about as I preach this morning, it was for their benefit, but now they're a little bit older, a little bit more seasoned, and there will be a test, not for them. And the test is going to come here in the next few years. We'll see how things work out. But anyway, Genesis chapter 24 and verses 1 through 4 suggests a natural lesson for us. And Abraham was old and well stricken in age. And Jehovah had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his servant, the elder of his house, that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray thee, thy hand into my thigh, and I will make thee swear by Jehovah, the God of heaven, and the God of the earth, that thou wilt not take a wife for my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But thou shalt go into my country, and to my kindred, and take a wife for my son Isaac. I don't know how old Isaac was at the time, but he was getting up there in years, at least from our viewpoint, but he was still young compared to just about everybody around him. He wasn't married. It was more or less the custom of the day, I believe, for marriages to be of an arranged nature. And so the servant of Abraham was commissioned to find a wife for Isaac. And he did that. He went back to Haran and found Rebekah. It says in chapter 24 and verse 67, and Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Now, why did God choose Abraham? Well, the answer is given in Genesis 18 and verse 19. Why Abraham? There are other godly men who existed then. There are men of renown, men in the Bible who were godly men. Melchizedek as an example. Why Abraham? And this is the answer. For I have known him to the end that he may command his children and his household after him that they keep the way of Jehovah to do righteousness and justice to the end that Jehovah may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of. He chose Abraham because he knew Abraham would teach his children. And that he did. Now, we have a responsibility with reference to our children. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, it says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and the admonition of the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, but it's a good general rule. And then the same chapter of Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Sometimes that foolishness manifests itself in poor behavior. Sometimes it manifests itself in the company we keep. Sometimes it manifests itself in the person that we choose to spend the rest of our lives with and who suffers then. So it's the responsibility of the parent to correct the child. Now, if you look at Proverbs chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2, Solomon says, my son, forget not my law, but let thy heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace will they add to thee. In other words, listen to people who care about you, especially spiritually. Listen and take their advice. I was very grateful with my son. He listened. I think he chose a wonderful woman to be his wife, just the one he needed. He's kind of a scatterbrain. She's very organized. And she's very adept at bringing that organization into whatever province she happens to be dwelling. John Paul needed that. She's a godly woman. And she would no more think about leaving the Lord or leaving the church than she would think about stopping breathing, because that's what it would take. And I'm very, very happy with that. But John Paul learned. He learned. Abraham was concerned for Isaac's choice of a wife. As you can imagine, he did not want Isaac to marry one of the daughters of the Canaanites. Well, it was natural that he should give advice, and it's advice, of course, we can learn from. So let's look at it. First of all, don't marry a Canaanite. Children, don't marry a Canaanite. Please don't go to school and start calling everybody a Canaanite. But don't do that, because you will regret it, not just in this lifetime, but you'll regret it forever. Rebecca, the wife that was fetched for Isaac, was equally concerned about Jacob. Somebody says, well, what about Esau? Esau wasn't going to listen. He married who he wanted to. But Rebecca was concerned about Jacob. And so in Genesis chapter 27 and verse 46, it says, and Rebecca said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these, of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? Now, Isaac was a good husband, and he listened to his wife. Remember what we said in class? Sometimes women are smarter than the men. At least they're more attentive to the local problems, and she was. And Isaac called Jacob, it says in the next verse, chapter 28, verse 1, and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. So, same problem, same idea, same concerns. The law of Moses outlawed mixed marriages. Now, when we talk about mixed marriages, we're not talking about mixed racially or just mixed up, because a lot of people are exactly the same. They're both mixed up, and they shouldn't be marrying anybody. But we're talking about people who are involved in a mixed spiritual marriage. And Moses says to the children of Israel, God says through Moses, neither shalt thou make marriages with them, that is the foreigners, thy daughter shall not give unto his son nor his daughter, thou shalt not take unto thy son, for he will turn away thy son from following me, that thou may serve other gods, so will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and he will destroy you quickly. The person you marry is going to have some influence over you spiritually. And there's some of us that can testify to the hardship that's involved there, how hard it is to stay faithful when our spouse has no concern for what's right and wrong or for the God of heaven. In verse 4, again he says, for he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. How many times have we seen that happen? Now, I've got up here on the screen, it's not a racial thing. It doesn't have anything to do with race when we talk about mixed marriages. Moses, after his first wife had passed away, married a Cushite woman. Some of the translations say an Ethiopian woman. I'm not real sure about the connection between Cushite and Ethiopian. It doesn't make any difference. But Aaron and Miriam disapproved because of the racial difference. And you know what God said about it? He didn't say anything. He just struck Miriam with leprosy. And Moses, being a meek man, prayed for her, and he healed Miriam of the leprosy. So they didn't say anything after that, did they? What God was concerned about was not the color of the skin. What he was concerned about was what people believed and how they would influence each other and how they would enhance or detract from their spirituality. And you need to be aware of that, and you need to be concerned about the same thing. Now, the consequence of disobedience in this matter is well documented in Joshua chapter 23 and verses 12 and 13. Joshua says, else if you do it all, go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they unto you. Know for a certainty that Jehovah your God will no more drive these nations out from your sight, but they shall be a snare and a trap unto you, and a scourge in your sides and thorns in your eyes, until ye perish from off this good land which Jehovah your God hath given you. You look at 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 1. Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, and Sidonians. And just to give you kind of what this says in a nutshell, he had 700 wives and an earache, I'm sure. And 700 wives, not enough. He had 300 concubines. That's 1,000 women. What did they do to him? They led him away from God. And for a while, he was as ungodly as the rest of the kings around him, in spite of God's blessing. Well, Christians are given these instructions with reference to marriage. Christians have a right to marry. Paul, talking about himself, says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 5, have we no right to lead about a wife that is a believer, even as the rest of the apostles and brethren of the Lord and Cephas? And in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2, it says, but because of fornications, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. So marriage is a good thing. Marriage was given by God because it's not good for man to dwell alone. And so Christians need to seek out companionships that a spouse can offer. Okay, now, to widows, he says in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 14 and 15. I desire, therefore, the younger widows marry, bear children, rule a household, give no occasion to the adversary for reviling. For already some are turned aside after Satan. It means not being married and without support, they're beginning to do things that they wouldn't normally think of, and certainly not approved of God. Then in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 39, it says, a wife is bound for so long time as her husband liveth, but if the husband be dead, she is free to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. Now, here's some advice for you, young Christians who are not married, or old Christians who are not married and may be thinking about it. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14. Now, I spend a lot of time saying that the application of Paul here is not to marriage, but it certainly does apply. Where it says, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers in verse 14. Don't form such a close alliance or friendship or fellowship with somebody who believes contrary to the truth, because they will influence you away from it. There are all kinds of strong bonds. The neighborhood that you live in, the school that you send your children to. I would like to think that everywhere children go to school in this state, that they would be taught morality and principles of righteousness. But it's not the case. But one of the strongest bonds that a person might join in with someone else is the marriage bond. And if you marry somebody that's not concerned with rights, more concerned with self and what to do to please them, you will suffer the rest of your life, because when you get to where you can't stand anymore and you leave whoever it is, which you're not supposed to do, you're stuck with them, but you leave them. Statistics say that every problem that you left behind in the old marriage, you bring it with you into the new one. And people who have been divorced once they get married, are twice as likely to divorce again. And if they're on the third marriage, they're something like 8 times more likely to divorce again if they have time. Sometimes that doesn't work out because they die. And sometimes they don't. Okay? but be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. Why? Well, what fellowship hath righteousness and iniquity? Or what communion hath light with darkness? Can you imagine coming home to your spouse from worship services and say, boy, that sermon was really good this morning. Well, what was it about? It was about realized eschatology. We had one of those during the gospel meeting, the 80-70 doctrine. Well, what does the old man care about that? He didn't even go to church. He's going to check, make sure that what you said were real words. And then he won't know what you're talking about. Can you imagine going home to your spouse and saying, what a great sermon. It was against sin and disbelief. Well, how's he going to feel? And how's he going to react? Or how is she going to react? To your faith, which says what? You're going to take it personally and say, well, you're devaluing me. Now, she's not going to say you're devaluing me, but that's how she's going to feel. And you know it. So it's good for you to have something in common when you get toward the center of your life. And if your faith you don't have in common, you're going to have problems. I have a good friend who's a member of the church here. Used to be here in the Valley. I think they've moved to Texas or some other place now. But he was a good, fine, upstanding member of the church, and I believe a good Christian. I think he was what God intended for him to be. And she was a good Muslim. You know, their children should have been made out of rubber so they could stretch a little bit because they were certainly getting pulled from one side to the other. I think they loved one another. I think they had a good marriage from the standpoint of getting along. But what are they going to teach their kids? They're going to teach their kids, no, your mother's a liar. Or no, your mother's mistaken. Oh, no, your father, he doesn't understand. And Ishmael was the child of promise, not Isaac. So what do you teach the children? Okay, this idea of being unequally yoked has a lot of different applications, but the application that we make is the one that we make with reference to Solomon and his 1,000 women. Too many times marriage is entered into lightly. We don't understand or take seriously the institution that we are entering. A lot of people get married today because they have to. Well, sometimes because the little girl is about to have a child. And if she wasn't pregnant, she would not marry the guy. Or because they have to, because they can't wait. Fornicators and adulterers, God will judge, friends. Whether you're 15 or 65. Don't be one of those fools, because there's nothing else to say about them. Foolish. So Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4 says, let marriage be had in honor among all, and let the bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. You understand that God instituted marriage and you don't mess with it. You do what God says. And to do otherwise is to invoke the wrath of God. Here is something that a lot of people don't understand. In fact, I've talked about this in different congregations and people don't understand it until I explain to them. And then they say, oh yeah, I get it. But marriage is not the most important relationship in this life. It's not? No. Jesus says in Luke 14, 26, if any man cometh unto me and hateth not his own father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. What does that mean? It means we've got to hate each other? No, it means we've got to put Jesus first. The most important relationship you have in this life is to your Savior. And if you have a good relation to your Savior, you will bless your wife with your presence. And she'll be blessed like no other. Now, here's another fact. some must remain celibate in order to go to heaven. And we're not talking about priests or nuns or that kind of a thing. We're talking about people who had a chance and blew it. Somebody asked me one time, David, if you had the opportunity to get married again, if it was okay for you to get married again, would you do it? And my answer, honestly and sincerity, is I don't know if I wanted to mess up somebody else's life. I've already messed up one or two. Well, what did Jesus say? Now, this is in the context of divorce and remarriage. In verse 9, it says, "And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife except for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And he that marrieth her when she is put away committeth adultery." That's hard, isn't it? And, you know, you talk to people today and they say, "Well, I don't know if I can do that." And this is exactly the reaction of the disciples, the 12, the men who are going to be apostles. It says, the disciples saying to him, "If the case of the man is sold his wife, it's expedient. You just, well, not get married." Right. That's right. And that's what Jesus says. That's the sense of what Jesus says. "But he said unto them, not all men can receive this saying, but they to whom it is given." Two things make that man. One is he wants to obey God, and the other is that he's thinking about getting married. He needs to hear what Jesus has to say. He says in verse 12, "For there are eunuchs that were so born from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs that were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs that made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake." He's not talking about the Apostle Paul. He's talking in the context of divorce and remarriage. There are some who, for the kingdom of heaven's sake, do not get married again because they don't have a right to. It would be a breaking of the law. Then he says, "He that is able to receive it, let him receive it." Somebody says, "Well, that means you don't have to do that if you can't do it, you don't want to." That's not what that means. It's the same thing he said over in Matthew 13 when he's talking about why some people could not receive the parables, why he talked to them in parables, because it was not given to the Pharisee and the Sadducee to know the mysteries of the kingdom. Phew. So, there are some people who are going to obey, and there are some people who are not going to obey. So somebody's just determined not to obey. Jesus realizes the futility of trying to convince them of anything. And that's basically all that's saying. Now, criteria for choosing a mate. And this is where I get in trouble. You can't guess why. Okay. Nobody's perfect. Nobody is going to measure up to your daddy. I have to say that to a lot of people. And, of course, young men don't look for somebody to measure up to their mother, even though they love their mother sometimes more than anybody they could ever marry. They never leave their mother. But some women will never marry because nobody ever measured up to their dad because they have an unrealistic view of their dad. I know someone who was on a date with a young man and she said, "Well, it's over. I'm not going out anymore with that guy." He was a good Christian fella. Led songs over at Glendale for a while. And just fine person. Good family. Faithful. What's wrong with him? Well, he was driving along and the next thing you know, he pulls out his handkerchief and he honks into it just like a goose. You know, that'd leave a lot of us out, wouldn't it? I said, "Well, what would you rather him do?" Well, she didn't have an answer for that. Okay, do you want to be an old maid? Now listen, I'm going to tell you something right now. You do not have to get married to go to heaven. Okay, you don't have to get married to go to heaven. But if you're going to get married, if you're entertaining those thoughts, what you need to realize is that marriage is an endeavor that you enter into with another human being who is probably as good as you are, but probably not any better. You get my drift? And if you don't like him honking into his handkerchief, don't you honk into your handkerchief. Okay, certain things are important for a happy life, and those are things that we want to look at. First of all, choosing a wife. I'm going to ask you a question. If she's not a Christian, if she's a heathen, an unbeliever, how is she bound to tell you the truth all the time? Why would she feel obligated to? Oh, it's the right thing to do. Well, let me tell you something. If we're all just microbes on this little piece of dust, there's no obligation to do anything except what suits you and what benefits you. You get my drift? Amos asked the question, shall two walk together except they have agreed? If you're a Christian, you need to marry a Christian. This is the sad part of it. Some members of the church are not worth giving any consideration to in this matter. So as you go shopping in the great supermarket of Christian singles, or you decide that you're going to get a car and start visiting other congregations looking for a boyfriend or a girlfriend, understand that there are a lot of cads in the churches of Christ. And there are, just like there are everywhere. And there are a lot of women who are not worthy. Okay? So find somebody who is a believer and who is active in the church. Somebody who is active in it. Does she love me? You remember Laverne and Shirley? And I forget it, I think it was one or the other. Laverne, she had a boyfriend, and she had to put him down. She had to put him down like the old beatniks used to do. Anyway, she had to break up with him. That's the phrase I was looking for. Because there were no fireworks, no rockets. Too many times our plain sight, what we see and what we need to see, is obscured by the smoke from the rockets. And too many times we mistake infatuation for love. Love is not infatuation or being in love. Love is not rebellion against mom and dad. I have known women who have gotten married to get away from home. It's the only way they could think of to get out of their house before they could make a living. I heard one of them's father said, well, if she just told me how bad she wanted to get away, we had to pay the first 3 months on our new apartment and been ahead. And you know what? He had it pretty well pegged, too. But sometimes women will do that. You make sure that whoever you get mixed up with, man or woman, is not just trying to assert their adulthood and trying to go through this rite of passage called marriage, because you know what? It ain't happy. It's not a good situation. Love is sometimes the product of considering the good qualities in a man or a woman, and the thing is, you don't really appreciate those until you're older, do you? Some of you folks, you were in love, but you will testify to the fact that being in love is not near what you've got now. Being in love. Oh, I just don't know what I'm going to do if I can't talk to him tonight, if I can't go out with him this weekend. And loving is, I don't know what I'd do if he wasn't here. Big difference. And I had a hard time seeing that when I was a kid. I had a real hard time with that when I was a kid. I was given to infatuation throughout my teenage years and my young adulthood. Does she love children and domestic life? Somebody says, well, we don't plan to have any kids. Liar. No, you know what? Both of my children were happy accidents. I could not have been more blessed with anything of a temporal nature than my children. But we didn't sit down and say, well, let's see, on October 28th, we're going to have John Paul. It was one of those up jump the devil kind of things, you know. Well, maybe we ought to use a little different phraseology, but God blessed us. And we had them. So if you're going to have the children, and you will when you get married, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, I desire therefore the younger widows marry, bear children, rule the household. Notice, the woman, the mother, rules the household. That's her domain, men. If you're single, a single man, another reason, a good reason not to get married is because when you get married, some woman is going to come in and redecorate your house. Why? Because it's her house now. And it ought to be. She's stuck in it. Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5. Without that's 2 Timothy. Without natural affection. Okay, chapter 2, verse 3 through 5. That the aged women likewise be reverent in demeanor, not slanderers, nor slave to much wine, teachers of that which is good, that they may train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, being in subjection to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Can you imagine having to teach the young women to love their husbands, to love their husbands or their children? Now, most women I know adore their children till they go to kindergarten and learn to say no or have a different opinion. That's just a part of growing up. And when they get to be teenagers, you know why the teenagers and the parents don't get along? Because if they got along, they'd never leave. That's the way it goes. But you have to love them, and you have to know how to love them. It's not just, you know, when they're tiny and cuddly, they're wonderful. But when they, what's the first word the child learns to say? It ain't daddy. It's no. Where do they learn to say that? From mom and daddy. Do they mean it? Absolutely. They mean it every bit as much as you do, see. So children need to be taught how to love their children. And if she doesn't, if she can't stand kids, don't marry her. Unless you can't stand kids, and then live in different states. Because they come. They don't ask permission. Does she use good judgment and have strong character? The best way to find out is let her live on her own for a couple of years these days. And see how it works out. Don't marry them out of her father's living room, because that's a mistake. Just nearly every time. Now, some of you old folks, like me, you don't have any idea what I'm talking about. The rest of us, we know. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4. Does she have strong character or just strong opinions? Proverbs 12 and verse 4. A worthy woman is the crown of her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is rottenness in his bones. You remember that. Chapter 14 and verse 1. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her own hands. And we see that from time to time, don't we? She got a good disposition? Well, just reading a few of the Proverbs that we've got here. In Proverbs 19, verse 13 and 14, a foolish son is a calamity to the father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. You've heard of Chinese water torture? There you go. House and riches are an inheritance for fathers, but a prudent wife is from Jehovah. It's the most wonderful thing that you can have in this life. Now, Proverbs 21, verse 9, it is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a contentious woman in a wide house. One of the happiest men I ever met was one who finally got permission from his wife to live in the attic. It was quiet up there. Proverbs 21, verse 19, it is better to dwell in a desert land than with a contentious and fretful woman. And Proverbs 27, verses 15 and 16, it says, a continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. He that would restrain her restraineth the wind. and his right hand encountereth oil. Now, in all seriousness, this is true about men, but sometimes it's more true about women. Once they got their mind made up, that's the way it is. And if she's a contentious person, well, you got worse than problems. Okay? Somebody, you're always picking on the women. Well, read Proverbs 31. There God extols all the wonders of a virtuous woman, says her price is far above rubies. And that's true. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, it talks about Sarah being a good example. And Ephesians chapter 5, verses 20 through 24, it talks about women being in subjection. These are all things that we take into consideration when choosing a woman. But what about choosing a husband? Is he a Christian? Same considerations. I'm telling you, it can be miserable, even if the guy is friendly to your faith. My grandmother used to say about my grandfather was a dry cleaner during the Depression. Never lacked money, because the worst times are there are more crooked politicians there are to have their suits cleaned. Sent four kids to ACC, or ACU, well, it was ACC then, paid cash for all four of them. During the Depression, or just right after the Depression, never lacked for anything. They had a coop full of chickens and a cow and a big garden, and that's all, and his cleaning job. That's all, they were wealthy compared to their neighbors. And he took care of my grandmother. And she used to weep, sit down on her little chair with her Bible in her lap and weep. She says, the saddest day of my life is when they lower him into the ground. Because he wasn't a Christian. Wouldn't be bothered with it. It broke her heart. Do you not see that? Because in reality, she knew where he was. The Lord was good to her. She had a hernia and had to go in for surgery the day he died. She didn't have to go to the funeral. And after the denominational preacher got finished with him, you'd have thought that he was had been elected a saint in the Catholic Church or something. Guy didn't know 1 minute of my grandfather's life, good or bad. But does that matter at a funeral? Apparently not. Don't ask for it, girls. Don't be asking for it. If you go out and find somebody who's not a Christian, you're going to be in trouble. If not actual trouble, you're in difficulty, you're going to be in emotional trouble. Does he love me or my body? Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. He's not talking about sexual desire. He's talking about love, agape love. Can he provide for me? One of the greatest problems that marriages have these days has to do with the subject of money. And money always goes back to what? It goes back to who's the boss in this joint anyway. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 18, it says, that if any provideth not for his own, and especially his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I have seen with my eyes young husbands can't find a job. Can't keep a job. Won't go looking for a job. That's how that's translated. While the young mother drags one of her children and is pregnant with another one off to work. You never saw that? Yes, you have. Yes, you have. It happens all the time. It's shameful for a Christian to do that. He's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And it used to be, well, I'm not even going to get into that. Does he have character? Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 23 says, her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. He's a man of character and high esteem. Or is he just a character, a jokester? You don't know anybody like that, do you? His disposition. Look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. Ye husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. That is, the way you know you're supposed to. Giving honor unto the woman as unto the weaker vessel, as being also joint heirs of the grace of life, to the end that your prayers be not hindered. Let me tell you something. The hardest thing to do when you've had a fight with your wife or your husband, and you know that the possibility that you could be wrong, maybe this time, is to go and talk to God about it. Because you know God knows. It's hard to face somebody that knows what a scoundrel you are and what a stinker you've been. So make sure he's got a good disposition. Check his closet for toys. You know, there's some men that think more toys than they do clothing and feeding their children. And so what gets neglected? In 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5, one of the things that love does is let's look at it. It says, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not its own, is not provoked, taketh not account of evil. I know that you guys have done this. You parents have done this. You have spent the night at the hospital. You've gone all the way back to the school, even though it's 5 or 6 miles through the sleet and snow, to pick up the homework that the child has left on the front porch of the school. You haven't done that. I've done it. I used to do it a lot. We lived in Prescott. You go and talk to the teachers and try and talk the grade up, maybe a point. I'll never forget. Paige did a wonderful thing. She took care of her friend, Stephanie Bardwell. Some of you remember her. She's in the hospital. She'd gotten run over by a car and she lost her leg, and Paige took care of her. Her senior year in high school. Well, about a week into this, I said, So every week, every day, I went to the school and I got her math homework and I took it to her. Now, I'm not a hugger. But when they gave her that diploma and I opened it up and I saw the principal's signature and that math teacher was standing right next to me, I gave her the biggest hug she'd ever had. And I'm not a hugger. Well, that was by the skin of the teeth. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling what you guys have done. But I know some parents that won't do that. I know some parents that won't do that because it puts them out. It costs them too much money. They seek their own. And we can look at this 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. Look at it when you've got some time. And we'll make some comments about it maybe later. Remember, it is forever. You cannot get out of it, pretend like it didn't happen, and just start over mowing down somebody else or plowing up somebody else's life. You can't do that and be pleasing to God. When divorce takes place, one soul at least is lost. Somebody's going to go to hell. Or there's going to be some repentance. And sometimes repentance does not have the desired effect of reuniting. Sometimes it's too late. Sometimes the other person is dead or remarried or something else has happened that you really can't say you're sorry and you can't make it up. God's law applies to all. Baptism does not erase the error. Repentance is what erases the error. The command in Acts 2:38 is not be baptized, it's repent and be baptized. And that includes people who are living in adulterous relationships. So it's a serious matter, isn't it? What you do will affect your happiness here and your eternal destiny. And it may affect somebody else. It will affect somebody else. It will affect the person that you have saddled with yourself. It will affect your children, and the way they behave will affect their children, your grandchildren. And maybe in 2 or 3 generations, if you haven't done well, nobody be in the church. Nobody would care about God because you didn't. Wouldn't that be something to stand before God with on the day of judgment? No, you don't want to do that. You want to do the best you can. And even if you don't do well, you want to do the best you can. And it'll show. You won't be perfect, but you'll be acceptable. Matthew 6 and verse 33 says, "But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." If we're seeking first God's kingdom and his righteousness, you will be the kind of husband or wife that you need to be. Now somebody says, "Well, I've been married 45, 50 years. What do I need this for?" Just ask yourself the question. If you were back there in the teenage years, just like you are today, would you make a good candidate to get married? Would you be the person that I would recommend looking for after this sermon? It's a good question, isn't it? How do you treat your wife? How do you treat your husband? Young people who are not married, old folks who might be considering taking this step, you better take it serious because it lasts forever. I know you've been very patient with me this morning. I want to thank you for your attention. If there's anybody here who needs to be baptized, or if there's anybody that needs to make confession of sins, this is the opportunity to avail yourselves of the opportunity. You can do that by coming to the front while we stand and sing.